Welcome to Optimize My Life, the ultimate radio show where we unlock the secrets to living our best lives. Now, before we dive into this exciting journey of self-improvement and empowerment, I want to take a moment to thank our incredible sponsor, The Hope Collection, for making this show possible. Their unwavering commitment to spreading hope and positivity in our lives is truly remarkable. We believe in the power of interaction, so we want you to be a part of this incredible journey. Call in, write to us, or connect on social media. We'd love to hear your questions, experiences, and challenges. Together, we'll create a thriving community of like-minded individuals, supporting each other to thrive and shine.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. It is Monday, it is October 30th. It is Hometown Heroes. But before our guest arrives, let's talk about what today is. Today is the day before Halloween. It's the day before all the kids in the neighborhood run around and cause chaos and have a lot of fun on a big sugar rush. One thing I would love to talk about is remembering when these kids come to your door, pay attention to the color buckets they have. Because different color of buckets mean different things. For instance, blue buckets signify that that child is autistic. So if they don't necessarily turn around and say trick or treat or thank you, doesn't mean they're being rude or disrespectful. They struggle with getting words out. And having a little bit of patience goes a long way. Hello.
Hello.
I was just going over, it's a big thing for me is that tomorrow's Halloween. And being mindful of the colored buckets that kids carry because blue is for autism. And so not to get upset or lose patience when a child, especially carrying a blue bucket, may not say trick or treat, may not say thank you, just may stand there and stare at you. But our guest is here. So Hometown Heroes would love to present, and I'm hoping I say this correctly, Tawana Wolfork. All right, I didn't butcher it.
No, not at all. You said it well. Thank you.
You have the alphabet of experience and certifications under your belt. And before we get into all the different things that you've trained in and done, can we talk about what got you into this rabbit hole to begin with?
When you say rabbit hole, what do you reference, just so I know where to start talking about? What do you mean, what rabbit hole?
I always call it the rabbit hole because I'm the same way you are, where, you know, you go through an event in life or something happens or you get this great idea and you start training on that idea, and then you figure once you meet that client or meet that person or you're going through something at the same time, you start learning more things and start getting more certifications, not realizing you just keep adding these certifications under your belt. But, you know, when you're working with mental health, there's not a one size fits all. And there's so many paths to take. And so as experience grows, so, you know, what got you into doing and working with trauma. And not just trauma, but you work with complex trauma.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for that. So the one note I will say is that the certifications post, you know, my graduate degree and license were very intentional. Actually came, you know, after being, you know, in the field for over 10 decades, for over a decade. And for that, I'm grateful because it meant that I was very attuned and in tune to what I wanted to really fully show up for and consent to in terms of the impact I wanted to make. How I showed up to the field, was interesting in that I, you know, social work, counseling, therapy was not in my rearview mirror. It was not even a figment of my imagination. Interestingly enough, considering my weary start in the world, it just was not. I actually wanted to, when I was in high school, I really wanted to either go into cosmetology school, culinary school, or fine arts academy. And that's really where my heart was set on. And my guidance counselor at the time was like, nope, I see you going to a four-year college and all the things. And I'm like, oh, damn, I don't know if that's for me. And, you know, it was a struggle in school, and so learning was always tender, and I always found comfort in the arts and humanities and creating. And so that's where I felt most at peace. But little did I know that, you know, almost failing out of college and kind of turning that around and getting my GPA up would land me across the world in Perth, Australia, which is really part of what set off my trajectory towards social work. And I had two people in my life, one my junior year of college, and then once I traveled abroad, a professor at the University of Australia. Both of them said to me, very different times, right, years apart, have you ever thought about social work? You light up around this. And I'm like, oh, what's social work? What's that? And I was already a sociology major and psychology major. So it felt in alignment once I learned more about it. And the dear person my junior year of college that put the first bug in my ear had, you know, mention one particular grad school, and that was the only grad school I knew with social work. And so so I was like, okay, so I guess that's where I'm going. And so I applied to Smith College School for Social Work, and not really knowing it was the top school in the nation for clinical social work and also a sister Ivy League, I had no idea. And it just was quite a journey. And you know, and this August I celebrated 20 years in the field, and it just, you know, I couldn't be more grateful. So I'll pause with that.
Sorry, apparently everybody needed my attention all at once. You know, now can you explain what complex trauma is?
So complex trauma really connects with, you know, relational, developmental, and attachment trauma and wounding that happens typically early on in childhood, But as we know, you know, there are different types of trauma. Big T shock traumas are like those single incident traumas. And complex traumas are those that happen with some chronicity and are connected to the good things that didn't happen. Often we think of trauma as like the thing that happened, but really it's, you know, it's how it gets translated in the body and how that manifests itself. And small T traumas are those traumas connected to, you know, for some folks, the burden of keeping family secrets. The good things that didn't happen. So not being acknowledged and taken joy and delight in, a family that has its legacy wrapped around competition where the good thing that didn't happen is rest and play were weaponized and shamed. And so a person grows up with some belief systems around that. And, so it's nuanced. It's not black and white, kind of a high level kind of sense of that, and that it really can impact how a person views themselves and in relation to self, themselves in relation to others, and themselves in relation to the world, and can impact the risks that they're willing to take or not take. And the quality of their relationships, the quality of their relationship with self. So does that make sense?
It does. In your viewpoint or your experience now, this, especially with intergenerational, for the trauma that happens when you're a child, does that a lot have to do with affecting, like, when you get older and bad things happen and you develop that more victim mentality where you tend to blame everything instead of learning how to deal with it?
I apologize. Can you repeat that, my dear?
Yeah, sorry. So dealing with this trauma as a child, and all the biggest misconception is it may not be some big, huge event. It can be something that we think about now as something small, but dealing with that trauma, does that have a play as they get older when they experience more trauma? Or even, I'll give you a good example, being in the military. And so a lot of soldiers join the military to escape the traumas they faced in life as a child. They turn into it being their safe space. And so as they deal with events that a lot of them weren't prepared for, they develop this victim mentality where, you know, no one wants to be with me. I can't keep anything, you know. When they lose, they live in such a controlling environment. As they lose that control, when they move from military world to civilian world, that trauma remanifests, and it becomes more of, it's all my fault, when in reality it really isn't.
Mm-hmm.
You see this happen a lot more?
So I would say, you know, yeah, thank you for your question around that. So I would say that it's important to anchor into the knowing that the way that the brain records what it wants us to remember to help keep us safe is part of the mechanisms that impact the degree to which something translates into trauma for somebody and for any one person. And, you know, you can have, you know, three kids growing up in the same household and living under the same less than optimal circumstances, but how each one of their brains records what it records to keep them safe is going to be different. And how then it, thus how it translates in the body. And so much of what happens with trauma is when when there aren't these corrective emotional moments of being attuned to and you know, walked through and being helped make sense of what's going on. And so when there's not an attuning, nurturing figure in the child's life to help, you know, to help make sense of that and help almost complete the stress response cycle, that then gets kind of stuck and stored in the body and the brain. And so that can just, there's no black and white way in the way that that manifests itself, you know, once a person is, you know, goes into adulthood. And I would say, in terms of, and again, I even also see like it's not very black and white in terms of a person that may have a mentality where they feel kind of like very victimized by the circumstances in their lives. Like there are people that on paper, it looks like they've had it all. They've had it made, that very much have that kind of viewpoint of the world and feel very victimized, you know? So it's really, it's interesting. There's no one kind of size fits all kind of explanation to how that manifests. And I just like to understand it from the perspective of, you know, how did what happened to that person? Were the generative and non-generative ways or the adaptive or maladaptive ways they made sense of it in their body and in their mind? And then how did that best translate into how they ingeniously figured out how to live and exist in the world? And sometimes those ways work for them and sometimes they don't.
So true. And I love how you emphasize there is no right or wrong way. There's no one size fits all.
Yeah. Because we're truly complex. We're really complex, beautiful beings. Yeah.
You know, with the coaching industry and all these blowing up, there's so many professionals that claim to be specialists. And so a lot of them don't fully understand and they get out of their element when it doesn't fit into the mold.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, getting people to understand that there is no right or wrong way. Trauma is trauma. Your body experiences everything differently based on you. And, you know, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about emotions. Because, you know, as kids, we're taught that emotions are bad. And it's not where we're meant to be taught that. It's just a habit because, you know, as an adult, when your child cries, we comfort them. We quiet them down. When they're toddlers, we tell them to stop crying because we can't understand to fix the problem when they're crying. And so, you know, you start to build this up to understand. And in this world of social media, I see hundreds of posts a day about this. And I've even had a couple personal therapists tell me that, you know, happy is the only good emotion. And I think that is so wrong. I think that's a big contributor to the experience of the inflation of trauma people feel, because they're blocking out all these emotions and not feeling and not experiencing body-wise what's going on with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do a little bit of your input on that.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I think, again, you know, when we think about, you know, some of the good things that don't happen in our lives, one of those things is being able to be more, have our humanistic emotions complex, often sometimes, you know, conflicting humanistic emotional existence bore witness to without judgment, criticism, and bias, and without somebody kind of labeling good or bad what they are seeing and witnessing, but just showing up for us and allowing us to just be, our emotional selves. And so often we are very smart human beings. We get it pretty early on. We get those messages of what are the appropriate ways to be and not be emotionally. And we often learn pretty on that any emotional, we learn pretty quickly that certain emotional states and ways of being cause distress in our human caregivers. And so we will very quickly wall those off, and learn that that's not okay. And I also think that the way that our society, American society, I can't speak for other societies, but the way American society journeys around emotional expression and what's okay versus not, especially, for instance, if we're talking about grief and bereavement, right? Like, even just down to the policies around, like, who came up with, so many days per whoever, however immediate this person is in your family that died. Like, one, who came up with that? And then two, are the number of days that I'm allowed off from work, what does that mean? Like, that's the only amount of days I'm allowed to grieve? Like, what if the grief happens beyond that? What if I'm still a hot mess after that? Like, months after, like, what does that mean? So I don't think we think about even just how we journey around and the messages we send, the stealth messages and expectations we send around what's okay and not, what's socially acceptable versus deviant around how we express our emotions and not. So it's really complicated. It's really nuanced. And I think what my greatest wish for humanity is if we could get out of our own way and slow down enough to just show up for ourselves when we are experiencing kind of that myriad of bittersweet emotions and not put ourselves in a gaslit vortex and weaponize ourselves for feeling, and then not do that to others, that we could just be in relation equitably and optimally with each other. And but often we struggle seeing and witnessing distress and pain in others. And, a lot of folks talk about not seeing equitable examples of how to journey through distress or distressful emotions, right? Like, and so that's to our disservice, right? And so when life, and you got to show up for life and you're feeling like a hot mess, right? Like, how do we not weaponize self and shame self? And we just can speak honorably and openly about, hey, you know what? If I'm a business owner, right? Like, last year I was not my healthiest and I had to make some big changes. And that meant having, sharing that dilemma honestly and transparently with my folks and taking great accountability and honor and showing up for myself. That's my greatest wish, that we could just, really pause and even dismantle the ease at which we can quickly try to destroy ourselves and others for just simply existing.
And all the sad part is, and the scary part is how true that is and how easy, especially in this day and age with the social media the way it is, say the wrong thing and someone's going to tear you apart. Right now I have children that are special. They're both different variations of autistic. Well, my son, think of young Sheldon, that's him. And he has developed, and I'm fighting with my school system, my kids in right now, because he has learned really quick as a child that if you tell someone you're mad, leave you alone, adults don't do that. They have the need, and I was guilty of this too, to cry and find out what's wrong and try to help him fix the problem. So he has developed using metaphors to explain his feelings and what he needs. So if he's upset and he wants you to cuddle him, he's a baby. But if he's frustrated and he's mad and just needs to be left alone to calm himself and regulate and do what he needs to do, he tells you, I'm a baby anaconda snake. And he picks animals, and he knows these animals, and happened to be, I'd started researching it. And I was working with David Keyes, a world-renowned hypnotherapist, and he was talking to him, and he goes, you know, I didn't understand what he was talking about. Once he put two and two together, he's like, this is what he's telling you he needs. Just leave him alone. Because the snake is the most volatile. So when he will lash out at you if he's frustrated and wants to be left alone. And so many schools want you to sit there and say, I'm mad, leave me alone. And I go, well, yes, but theoretically speaking, y'all don't listen to him anyway. I said, you should mm-hmm. be applauding him because he has done something that most adults can't even do. He can tell you in a way that works for him what he needs when he is feeling those emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Accept it and acknowledge it and move on.
Mm-hmm.
So in our house, it was, you know, once I heard that my kids were autistic, and I started Googling it, the biggest thing they said is they don't understand emotions. And the more I started learning about it, the more I understood, we just don't teach emotions in real time. We show pictures of faces and say, this person's mad, this person's sad, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
And you're feeling this way. And kids don't work in hypotheticals. So when you teach them mm-hmm. in real time and teach them self-regulation techniques that work for a child, that's something that they can use into adulthood. And it molds and adjusts as time progresses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me watching these kids, and a lot of kids, because that's what I do, is I work with, now I work with veterans, but I worked with special needs kids. And I teach them and families how to understand their emotions, not to bury them. It's not healthy to bury them. If you get mad, you're mad. Let's figure mm-hmm. out a healthy output for those emotions and a healthy way to express them. If you need to yell, yell. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Crying is okay. But now we're in mm-hmm. the society of, if you're sad for too many days in a row, you're depressed. And if mm-hmm. you're depressed, you need to go on meds. Like, no, that's not the case. You may need meds, but let's figure out why you're depressed. Let's figure out the reasoning and the body answering behind it. And most people, and I don't know if this is, you know, something that you agree with or not, and if you don't agree, that's, you know, that's okay, is that, you know, mm-hmm. our emotions are there for a reason. It's our brain telling us something. And basically, you know, your brain is the laziest organ out there. Ironically, it does what it can to conserve energy. And so, you know, our emotions are our warning signs. Our anxiety that we feel, our depression, all that stuff are signs to protect us. And we're being taught not to listen to the signs and just ignoring it and saying we need medications to fix it. Is that something that you've dealt with a lot with your clients, that they're looking for the actual causes, or are they looking for the quick fix and looking for the medications to fix it?
No, my experience is that, you know, it's kind of a both and, that they many come, you know, desperate for help and support for someone to see their boo-boos and that they've been dealing with for a long time and maybe, you know, have not received the type of affirming care that they need. I mean, some may want a quick fix. I'm sure if the pain is great, like living with pain is difficult. But the majority of my folks have come to me, they find me because, they've put all their best effort into figuring into what they thought was their deepest and best healing. And they just realized that something's still off and that they deserve to truly get at the roots of their greatest healing. And that's really what I'm known for. That's why I call myself a doula for the souls, because I realized that there was a trend of people coming to me and just having this faith that I could really birth them through the deepest of their most tender and scariest emotions, birth them through being seen in a way they always wished but are deathly afraid of. I think really the majority of people, you know, really want to learn what it's like to be seen and held and understood and truly attuned to without judgment, without weaponization. And like, that's on a whole nother level to have that experience. It's absolutely life-saving and game-changing. That's just what I see.
Now, reading over your stuff, and you're trained in EMDR. Can you explain that to me? I've tried understanding it, and for me, I just have a hard time trying to, because I know what NLP is. I'm trained in it. I'm trained in hypnotherapy. But what exactly is EMDR? And how is it useful?
Yeah, so first let me anchor in, what is your knowing of eye movement desensitization reprocessing therapy? What is your knowing of it? Like, what's your knowing?
I use it to find the root cause of issues. I help individuals, especially veterans, understand what they're struggling with, like the anxiety and the trauma that they've experience, because a lot of times when we go to war, our trauma isn't the trauma of the war itself. It's what we've experienced as a child or earlier in life, and that manifests itself again in what we've experienced in overseas, or and there's little triggers we have. So I help use it to, one, slow down the triggers and get them to see what these triggers are. And it can be something simple as a tone of voice or a sound or a smell, and getting them to understand and connect the dots between A, B, and C to help overcome what they're dealing with, to help relieve the symptoms of anxiety, depression, where they're struggling. It's basically, for me, I use it to help open the subconscious mind and bring it to the conscious, so you know you can put all the dots together yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, for your dear, you know, audience, EMDR. You know, eye movement desensitization reprocessing therapy is a evidence-based, you know, psychotherapy approach and treatment developed by Francine Shapiro in the 90s. And it utilizes what a mechanism called bilateral stimulation, which can be achieved by activating both the left and right sides of the brain. And that could be through eye movement, it could be through self-tapping, it could be, there's so many different ways to achieve, and there have been so many beautiful innovations around EMDR. For instance, I'm trained in SAFE EMDR, which is a somatic attachment focused EMDR, developed, which is an innovation of Francine's model, developed by Deb Kennard from the Professional Transformation Institute out on the West Coast. So there are so many iterations and innovations, but at its core, it is an evidence-based approach and treatment that can help get at healing roots connected to trauma, single event trauma, complex trauma, you know, anxiety, depression, you know, it's just another beautiful kind of avenue and path to healing. There are so many, you know, no one thing owns the path and owns the block on healing. You know, that's just one of the many contributions to the field of therapy and healing. And so, you know, it's, I'm grateful to be, trained and certified in it, and currently a consultant in training. So just, you know, very grateful for that. So is that helpful?
It is. So basically it's a form of anchoring.
A major component of EMDR, you know, it is a 8-phase protocol when done to fidelity, and the first initial phases, there is a lot of what we'd call resourcing and anchoring, right? And then based on the type of, you know, innovative EMDR kind of approach you're trained in, you know, there's some nuances. I focus a lot of my actual anchoring and resourcing. It's a really somatic attachment focused and relationally based, you know, but it's really, you know, just assisting and facilitating a sense of feeling anchored to self, grounded, feeling, you know, that they are able to stay within a optimal kind of window of functioning and capacity, and, you know, able to just be able to ebb and flows with, you know, with distressful and pleasant emotions and cognitions and such. So,
Now, how does that help with the trauma that someone deals with?
Well, depending on, you know, what ultimately gets set up to be targeted in EMDR, if a person is going that route, is essentially, you know, the way the brain has captured the details. The somatic, the sensory, the cognitive, all the details tied to said, to how, you know, said experience was translated in the body. What the function and capacity of EMDR is, it allows for a desensitization and that whatever targeted memories or, you know, whatever aspects of the event, the distressful event, whatever was being targeted, those elements become less and less distressing as the person is really journeyed through EMDR. And that's really the beauty of it and the efficacy of it, is that what might have been triggering at a level of 10 for me, by the time I'm, walked through EMDR to fidelity, ideally I'm experiencing a unit of distress that is much, much lower, which just means that the experience was moved from a part of the brain, like right where it's just kind of been locked in and experienced as very triggering, to a part of the brain where it's more processed, reintegrated, and kind of filed in a way that is no longer as disturbing, and where I have a degree of distance and I'm able to kind of journey back to the site of the car crash without re-experiencing what might be like those symptoms of trauma, like panic, hypervigilance, intrusive thoughts, flashbacks, that type of thing. So it's really efficacious in that regard when done to fidelity.
Okay. So it's like basically watching it like you're watching a movie. Give me 1 second. Okay. Sorry, I have my Google set up for my kids so they know when they have class to log into their computers. They go to school online.
No worries.
Because I've had some, I worked with a client that had it done, but what they did is they blocked all those bad memories instead of looking at them like you're viewing them like a movie.
Yep, and that's almost, if you can imagine, before EMDR, imagine walking down the corridors of your brain, and on one side of the corridor of your brain are a neat row of stacked file cabinets where it's nicely organized, color-coded, all the things. And then on the other side of the corridor of your brain are a disorganized row of file cabinets that are like drawers are coming off, doors are hanging, not locking, disorganized, and are in disarray. Those files, disorganized files that are all over the place and unkept and causing a ruckus, right? That is essentially what gets kind of reprocessed and then migrates over to the other side of the corridor into the neat kind of the file cabinet system that is really organized, already coded, and it's put back into its most appropriate place of reintegration back into the brain and body essentially, and gets reprocessed. And once it's reprocessed, that's where it stays locked. It does not migrate back over to the disorganized, file cabinets, right? So that's essentially, like, if you can visualize that's what's happening. Like, so within the process of the bilateral stimulation, you're kind of migrating over and reprocessing, the mechanisms of reprocessing are happening, and things are getting restored in an adaptive way where it no longer causes impairment and suffering for the person. Does that make sense?
It does. And I love how you do that, because I've talked to so many different people and their whole way of is just blocking out those feelings and blocking out those memories, so you have that gap. Instead, you're losing the emotion to go with it, so you're understanding what your body's going through, and it's not triggering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the time you're kind of when you've done it to fidelity, that essentially is the goal, right? That's essentially the goal, And the degree of efficaciousness is not a sign of failure or anything. It's just, everybody's body is different and brain is different and, needs maybe additional kind of mechanisms of healing to be added to, the EMDR or what have you. But it's just a great contribution to the field of trauma, to the field of healing, to wellness, to healthcare,
It is. I love how the way you explained it. It takes the emotions out of it, which is okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It gets you in the logical aspect of your brain to understand the situation and overcome it. Like, the biggest mistake we make is we ask ourselves why things happen, why we feel that way. And it's hard for us to come up with that answer because we're using the emotional. When we use the word what caused us to feel that way? What happen to is where we get to that logical aspect of our brains when we get the answers. So we can put two and two together and understand this event happened. This is why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. And it makes it easier to overcome the trauma that you dealt with.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very, very much so. So yeah, so I just want to, thank you so much for the opportunity to share time and space. And I did have a question for you. Tell me what inspired you to start this show or podcast. What inspires that?
Well, Optimize My Life Radio has been running for about 10, 15 years now.
Uh-huh.
And about a year and a half ago, I went on a rant with on social media about the coaching industry and how you get so overwhelmed with the world and how you have to have these high-ticket items and sell big bucks to make big bucks. And we're forgetting about the emotional aspect and the people we're trying to help and why we got into this world to begin with. And so from there, it kind of spiraled where I went from few shows to helping create the shows. And when I started talking to a lot of professionals, they were trying to get their message out there and do it in a way that shows that they're real, they're honest, and they are truly trying to help. So that's what got me to create Hometown Heroes. It's to highlight people who are wanting to make this world a better place, to be able to help individuals. And it's not for them about the money. And it's not about the recognition and the fame or the millions of followers or whatever
floats
your boat this time.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, thank you for your service and in making that such an impact and elevating such stories. And, you know, really grateful to share this time and hope we get to connect again.
I would love for you to come back on in about a month. I'm finishing up putting it together. I am creating two new shows. One's going to be Monday evenings and one's going to be Friday morning. And it's on trauma.
Great. And well, yeah, please keep me, please keep me, you know, close by and just reach out. I'm there.
Because I want, especially with our veterans, on average, 2,300 a year commit suicide due to mental health issues that they are not receiving help from the veterans. Association.
Right.
I was one of those. When I wanted a therapist, I called the VA and they said, I'll call you when there's one available. Five years later, I'm still waiting for that phone call.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
So I want to create shows to help, especially with the trauma aspect of life, with the trafficked, you know, victims, the abuse victims. That to overcome, but also share their story, because I personally believe that the more you share your story, the more it helps you heal at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep, yep. Our shame dies when we share our stories in safe place, in safe, with safe people and in safe places. So, yeah. Absolutely.
Before we end the show today, is there any questions for our guest?
Hi, Mary, this is Bob. I just have a comment regarding the program and the work that you're doing, Tawana is doing. We really appreciate you taking the time to broadcast that on our network, and it's so important to people, because I do dealings in I've been dealing for years with people who have addictions in alcohol and other drugs, and I'm not certified in that area, but I've done it through working with a lot of people and with counselors and so forth that are counseling people that I work with. And so it's just so important. It's so important the work that you're doing and the discussion that you guys have on this show. It's really I think it's vital for anybody that might be listening to hear what you guys are talking about and to understand what it is because there are different impacts. Like you said, I think that there's everybody's different and everybody has different impacts on things that happen in their lives. And but it's so important to talk about that with them and to discuss it. And I just want to thank you. Thank you both. Mary, thank you for bringing Tawana on, and Tawana, thank you for coming on and sharing with us. It's just tremendous insights that you're giving to various people. And I know it's going to help some people. And God bless you, and thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Back
God
to
you, my dear.
You're welcome. go ahead, Mary.
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
Go
ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to just say that with people who have addictions that I deal with, and people who have been had a lot of traumatic experiences in their lives, it's so important that there is someone that they can talk with, someone to help them through it. And so that's basically what I do in working with people. And some of them have been my own children that I've helped through the situation. And so it's when you're a parent, you can't see the forest for the trees, and you're just so close to it that you you have a hard time dealing with it. But working with their counselors and being there when they are being counseled, because I've done that in many times, and just learning from that and being able to help a lot of different people, it just makes a big difference in their lives.
My God.
So thank you. And God bless you.
Tawanda, if people are looking to get in touch with you, what is the easiest way to do that?
Yeah, so they are more than free to, look me up. I know folks just based on access don't have all the best access to, technological resources. But for those that have the resource, can find me online at sacredgroundinstitute.com. I'm also on Instagram as well at Sacred Ground Institute. I just launched my YouTube channel. I sent you all of that, so I don't know if you'll post all of my handles on your, I don't know what kind of your process is, but I just launched my YouTube channel a couple of weeks ago, and just that's kind of just starting that off slow. Folks can also email me at Sacred Ground. Sacred Ground Institute at gmail.com as well. I'm very accessible.
And the link for this show in the description is all of your contact information.
Wonderful.
Well, anybody who wants to get a hold of her and help with and struggling with trauma in some form or another, all of her information is here, including her background.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you for joining us today. Next week, we kick off favorite weeks, and it is Veterans Week, which leads us into... Quiet. My mailman has bad timing when he comes. I got two dogs. So next week starts our week for Veterans Week, and we get to talk to current service members, but also some of the movers and shakers of their time, including an individual that was part of the Tuskegee Airmen and a few other legends, such as Papa Jake, who is a TikTok sensation telling his stories, a 101-year-old man who was at the Battle of the Bulge. And we have different guests all week long during our different shows, which ends our week with a big salute on Friday with Captain Len Kane, and he talks about his experience in the military and a few guests, which rounds us into the new month. And also November 13th is our International Kindness Day. And we will have a special host on that show, the founder of the Kindness Campaign himself, Len Kane, and the creator of Kindness Club for Kids. Ariana will be co-hosting that show, which will open the lead into our new show coming up on Monday evening, the Kindness Club for Kids, a show for kids, by kids, about not only kind acts and things they do to help others, but teaching how your mind and being kind to yourself and how you think about things has a big impact on how you portray yourselves on the outside.
Wow, that's great.
Mary?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Just catching about 5 minutes of the last hour, but when we were talking about, you know, mental and also, you know, what you're talking about this during this show, it just brought into me as to what happened back in Maine. Plus, on top of that, the passing of Matthew Perry, because basically they're very connected, even though in situations, you know, we all need the help, you know, even in everyday life, everything that, you know, you face, you know, and there is all kind of, you know, emotional things that goes through one person's mind, you know, whether it is traumatic, whether it is an addiction or anything. We all need help. And the, you know, the way, you know, our world is just so much involved in this, you know, that it's hard. It's hard to digest on it. And it really helped to be able to talk, to be able to help others and things like that. So it is, you know, it is really an issue that we're not better and, you know, from anybody else. We all go through that. And it's hard, you know, you feel sad because for the ones that kind of bottles it and, you know, run through it through their own mind without having to be able to voice it or be able to be in the state of mind where you can help others. And it's hard. It is hard for people to, you know, to go through that, you know, by themselves or, you know, be able to offer the help for others that because they have gone through, you know, the same situations. And, you know, we just try to go, you know, day by day to do the best you can. But there are times when, you know, you're never alone. You know, I don't care what you say, you know, you're never alone because one way or the other, you know, we're all in this together. And we just have to, you know, prevail and, you know, do the best you can and pray that, you know, the one person that you look to is having God by your side and to give you the strength to face it. Sometimes, you know, it is very hard to face, you know, what we're going through, you know, but there's only one person that we actually can rely on to be able to pull us through, you know, the hard times and the different situations. And we're all human. That's it.
Yeah,
that is 100% true and so correct. And I truly believe understanding that aspect alone and being able to incorporate that into your life is a big step to overcoming what you're dealing with.
Yeah,
so,
it's not easy, but...
Go ahead.
But, you know, a lot of times you just wonder, you wonder, you know, through your mind, and you think of, you know, is there any better? Is there anything better? Is there anything that I can do? How do I position myself, you know, to be able to face all of this? What is it I can do, whether you're stuck in a house by yourself or whether you're out there, you know, amongst people? You know, they're different situations, you know, but, you know, me, you know, and there are others that may not think the same, but to me, you know, you rely on one the one and only that gives you, you know, the strength and the ability for us to go from, you know, one day at a time. And without him, it's rough for everybody, you know, whether they go through, whether they can, you know, skate right through, whether they have a, you know, the ability to, you know, to open up and want to help others. You know, we all have our destiny and how, you know, how we make out of everything.
You know, that the hardest thing to do is not to compare ourselves to somebody else.
No, we can't.
You know, we look at what we believe standards are, and then we start comparing ourselves. Well, we didn't get over this right, or we didn't react right. And so there's something wrong with us. When every person is different, how you deal with that is how you deal with that. And that's okay.
And like you said, everybody is different. Everybody. I don't care who you are. Even, you know, everybody different in different situations and, you know, how your thoughts are and what you think you can do. And, you know, because we are. God never made us all the same. He made us all different.
How boring this world would be if we were all the same. We would be living in separate land.
You know, I was raised on a farm, and I'm sure different than a lot of people, you know.
It's like so, people would tell me that my sarcasm is a defense mechanism for me. And I sat and thought about this, and I thought about it, and I go through this support group for trauma, for PTSD, for soldiers. And I finally clicked. I go, no, my trauma is not a defense mechanism for me. I understand what I'm feeling. My sarcasm is a defense mechanism because I'm irritated and someone asked me the dumbest question in the world or that I view as a dumb question. And I have no patience to be nice to you. So my way of being nice to you is to be sarcastic. And my husband tends to be the brunt of that one because he comes to me with some of the dumbest questions in the world at the wrong time. But, you know, for me, I'm just understanding that there was nothing wrong with me and my sarcasm was okay. It wasn't a defense mechanism. It's nothing I did wrong. You know, uplifted my spirit a little bit, knowing that I wasn't screwed up, because the way therapists have told me is that I was basically using this to hide. And I started, and that's the thing, is people tell you things and you start to believe it.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Yep, yep.
And self-talk is so important. What we talk ourselves about, and with we talk to ourselves, that's so important. And that's probably a very high percentage of the talking we hear and we do. So it's very, very important for us to try to say the right things to ourselves, positive affirmations and things that help us to make changes in our life if that's what we want. And to understand and believe that we can do it if we really want to.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time for today. Join us back here tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. And I do believe Ron and Rick are planning something special for Halloween. Not 100% sure what it is, but it's
great.
Out of my pay grade.
Well, wishing you all the best.
Thank you for coming on today, and I can't wait to have you back when we launch the new shows. And I did email you a link to the show, so it'll be live,
beautiful.
Or it'll be available to listen in about 5 minutes.
Beautiful. Yes, I just put a comment up there. So, yeah, thank you.
Have a good day. Have a good night.
Mary, amazing as usual.
Thank you for tuning in to Optimize My Life Radio. We hope you found today's show insightful and empowering. Remember to follow us on social media at Optimize My Life for updates, additional resources, and to stay connected with our community. Join us back here tomorrow at 12 p.m. Eastern for another enriching episode as we continue our journey towards a more fulfilling and optimized life. Until then, take care, and remember to make each day count.